Hello, everyone. It's me, Rob. How's it going? Jordan is off doing some more Hollywood stuff. Hollywood Jordan, as he's known affectionately around the office. He's off this week. It's another Rob solo ep for you, but it's going to be a really great episode. I have got tech and culture reporter from NBC News, Kat Tenbarge, coming on the show in just a minute to talk about TikTok. As we've seen over the last week or two, it's actually kind of amazing. You know, the United States Congress, these people can't seem to agree on anything. Certainly not when it comes to, you know, enacting legislation to like meaningfully help improve people's lives. You know, education, no. Healthcare, no. Guns, no. Housing, no. Climate, no. They can't quite seem to come together to find any bipartisan solutions to any of these big, important crises. But they did somehow find it within themselves to come together over the last week or two. This happened very quickly, and passed this bill that is an effective ban of TikTok. Really, what the bill is trying to do is force the Chinese company that owns TikTok, ByteDance, to divest from the company, something that they've repeatedly indicated they have no interest in doing. That just passed the House. It's moving to the Senate now in the U.S., so we're going to see what happens with that over the next couple of weeks. But I wanted to spend some time this week to talk about the potential implications of that. You know, is this a bill that has anything to do with privacy and protecting people's privacy? Is this going to have far-reaching consequences? Is this going to new Patriot Act giving the United States government the ability to control what kind of information people have access to? Is this going to have electoral ramifications? All kind of interesting questions came up, and it was really fantastic to talk to Kat Tenbarge about some of these important questions that are being raised right now with this potential ban of TikTok. You know what I think it is? I've been trying for a few years now to become prominent on TikTok, with not very much success. And I just recently, finally, the TikTok algorithm gods finally smiled on me, and I had a somewhat successful TikTok, a singular successful TikTok. And then immediately afterwards, as soon as I start building up some kind of a platform on there, it's being banned. Is that a coincidence? Is that a coincidence to you folks? Yeah, I don't think so. I think there's something deeper going on here, and it has everything to do with me, Rob Rousseau, the protagonist of reality. Anyway, stay tuned for Kat Tenbarge, and we're going to answer some of these questions, or try to. And folks, if you enjoy this show and want to support it and want to get access to all our amazing bonus content, please, if you can, support the work that we do here on the Insurgents Podcast by visiting insurgentspod.com and becoming a subscriber or one of our beloved paid interns. We just had another great episode earlier this week with... I mean, was it great? It was with Ken Klippenstein. He somehow evaded security at Insurgents Global HQ yet again. This man is a system of tunnels under the headquarters, I'm convinced. We've got Judy from HR down there with one of those headlamps, really scoping it out and trying to get to the bottom of how he keeps getting back in here. But regardless of that, it was a good conversation with Ken about his new piece in The Intercept, revealing that feds and, federal agents, the intelligence community, is targeting extremist gamers. And considering that's how most of the audience of this program could potentially be classified, I thought that was something that we should really spend some time on. So if you want to listen to that episode, you got to subscribe. We do two episodes a week, one free, one bonus episode. If you enjoy listening to this show, please do support the work that we do and get access to all that bonus content. There's some really fantastic guests and episodes that you're missing out on if you are not a subscriber to this podcast. Anyway, that's enough chit-chat from me. Let's get to this conversation with NBC News tech and culture reporter Kat Tenbarge, who is going to be joining the show right after this. And now we are joined by Kat Tenbarge. Kat, thank you very much for joining the show. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Yeah, it's been going pretty well.
Good. So Kat is the tech and culture reporter for NBC News, and a lot of things that I think would be great to weigh in on going on right now. It's funny, we haven't spoken to since I was unjustly banned from Twitter or X.com.
Yeah.
Everything app.
It's a new era.
Yeah, it is. No, that was quite an exciting experience for me.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild time.
It was a wild 48 hours.
Yeah, yeah. The whirlwind. It's weird being this, all of a sudden being perceived like that. You know, something you have that feeling on social media, like I'm sure you're familiar with this as well. All of a sudden you have that feeling of like, ah, gosh, I'm being perceived.
Yes.
It was like that, like times a million.
Yeah.
So before we get into anything about tech and TikTok and all that stuff that we wanted to talk about, I got to ask you just a brief question, which is maybe even more important than some of those topics, which is, Kat Tenbarge, are you a gamer? Have you been gaming lately?
I'm not a huge gamer, but I do like some games. Like I like The Sims and I like games like that, but I would not consider myself in the gaming community. I don't know nearly enough about it for that label.
Okay. Well, I think The Sims counts. So we can grandfather you into that. You should look into Helldivers too. We can conscript you into the war against the bugs and the automatons in the Helldivers universe. You can just jump feet first into the craziness with us.
Perfect.
Squad
that
up.
Great.
Okay. this is the content that our listeners really crave here. But you know, the real reason that I brought you on outside of talking about gaming was to talk about this bill that's going through Congress or just passed Congress a day or two ago, targeting TikTok.
Yes.
I guess a good way to start off the conversation is just, could you explain what this bill is called and what it claims to do and what it does, and just kind of, in case anyone's not been following this story, I don't know how deeply invested into the TikTok world that some of our listeners are, but if you could just give us a little bit of an overview about what this latest bill targeting TikTok is.
Yes. So there have been efforts and conversation about banning TikTok in the United States for years, dating back to when Trump was still in office in like 2020. Basically, as TikTok became one of the biggest social media platforms for American consumers, from the very outset of that, like rise to popularity, there was this idea that we heard from various elected officials, whether it was the president or people in Congress. It was this idea like, hey, this is a Chinese-owned app. Is that a problem? And of course, from the outset, it was presented as a problem that this app had Chinese ownership. And so there have been multiple proposed bills. This is just the latest iteration of this legislation. But last year, at around this time, there was actually a different bill that it was more restrictive. It encroached more in terms of what it wanted to do. And so that was viewed poorly on both sides of the aisle last year. That was viewed as too restrictive. And then when this bill, which has to do, the title is like Foreign Adversary Controlled Apps. So this bill was presented as a more lenient, right, exactly. This bill was presented as a more lenient version of previous sort of quote unquote TikTok bans. And they hate when you call it a ban. Like people in Congress are like, this isn't a ban. But in effect, what would end up happening is likely that TikTok, as we know it, would disappear. And one thing, you know, when I sat down to read this bill, the first thing that struck me is that it's kind of a short bill. Like it didn't take that long to read. But of course, like my first question when I sat down to look at the text, and the text is always really jargony. It's not intended for the average public member of the public to like read and understand. So when you sit down to read this, it's like, Foreign Adversary Controlled App. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And of course, it says, like, for the definition of Foreign Adversary Controlled App, like, scroll down to section 4. So you scroll down to section 4, and it literally just says the definition of Foreign Adversary Controlled App is TikTok. That's the definition of that term. It's TikTok first and foremost, and then it's any other app that's like owned or produced or created by ByteDance, which is the Chinese tech company. And then the last thing they slip in there is that in the future, the president can determine what counts as a foreign adversary controlled app. So it mainly applies to TikTok, but they're putting in that sort of provision for the future where whoever is president at any time can sort of campaign against any app that they want to.
Yeah, I think that's the really alarming thing, this kind of nebulous idea of who qualifies as a foreign adversary and the idea that the United States government can just determine at any time to give someone that designation, which can have a really restrictive effect on people's ability to have free speech and freedom of expression. So like I'm wondering, like, because there was movement on this, like you talked about for years. There was a lot of talk during the Trump administration on this, but it went nowhere. There was that version that you're talking about last year. Is it just a matter of them getting the language to the point where they need it to be? Or like what's actually different about this moment that is like it's kind of remarkable actually the speed with which this has come together, and which I think is alarming to a lot of people also that pay attention to the US government, because you know these people can't fucking agree on anything, right? And then especially when it comes to things that could like meaningfully impact people's lives. But this all of a sudden has become this like big priority and has now sailed through kind of with broad bipartisan support. So what is different about this time? Is it really just a language thing, or is there something else?
So there have been a lot of theories about what is kind of really going on behind the scenes here. And I will say, like, one of the first things I thought about is when you think about Congress and you think about how Congress understands technology, it would be very difficult for me to believe that most people in Congress who passed this legislation or are in support of it have actually downloaded and used TikTok. I think even the people in Congress who have TikTok accounts, which Joe Biden also recently launched his TikTok account, but I don't think Joe Biden has TikTok on his phone. I don't think Joe Biden has ever scrolled through TikTok. I think it's his social people who are the ones who actually understand the app. So when you think about like how does Congress learn about the technology that young Americans and also old Americans use? I think that, what we know they do is they read like Wall Street Journal articles and New York Times articles and Washington Post articles. They read like articles in mainstream media and they watch cable news. And that's how they learn about what's going on these apps. And so I think about like what has been the news about TikTok recently that has likely caught their attention. And since TikTok, again, like rose to prominence, became the fourth biggest app in the United States. Right away, Meta and other kind of competitors in like the space in the social media space, they have floated and pushed these stories to their contacts in the media that suggest that TikTok is doing all of these bad things. So like for example, in like 2020 and in 2021 and in 2022, you saw a lot of articles that were like, kids are following like these trends on social media, these like horrible TikTok trends. Like it
Was
goes
the
back
Tide
to,
Pods part of that, or was that before that? I can't remember.
I think Tide Pods was actually even before TikTok, but it's
Wow.
very
The same
similar. It's
concept,
very
yeah.
similar to that concept. Like they would even recycle old kind of tall tales that have been circulating on the internet for decades, like the Chubby Bunny Challenge, which is something that I heard about when I was like 10, which is where you shove a bunch of marshmallows in your mouth and then you try to say Chubby Bunny. So they kind of recycled that as like a TikTok trend that wasn't a real trend, where they were like, kids are gonna choke to death because of TikTok. And it's like, journalists like Taylor Renz for the Washington Post, she's looked into these trends and so have other people and been like, this was one or three videos that didn't go viral. Like, you can't really constitute that this is a trend. So we've seen that sort of like aggressive anti-TikTok media for years, but most recently, the stuff that was getting a lot of mainstream media traction and play is this idea that TikTok is incubating like anti-Israel sentiment as well as just like anti-American sentiment in general. So like another sort of viral hoax trend within the past 6 months or so was this idea that Lots of teenagers on TikTok were reading Osama bin Laden's letter to America. And, you know, it's complicated because there were some viral TikToks about this, and people were absolutely like reading it because of TikToks that they saw. But it was also going viral, as is always the case. None of this is constrained to just TikTok. Whenever there's some major trend or some major body of thought, it's also happening on Twitter. It's also happening on Reddit. It's also happening on all the other American social media companies. But TikTok has repeatedly been scapegoated as like the one platform that's turning kids anti-American and anti-establishment. And when I heard about, you know, this ban passing so quickly with such unanimous support, like this proposal, I was like, I wonder if that has something to do with the recent mainstream media attention that kind of made it seem like TikTok was yet again like the scapegoat for driving all of this sentiment. And when you think about what people in Congress actually agree on, one thing that across the aisle that they tend to agree on is support for Israel. So I did wonder if that had something to do with it. I also think that it's probably also like numerous factors. So, like we talked about previously, they did a version of this bill last year, and this one is not that different. So it could just be another thing where we're just seeing like the latest attempt at pushing this through.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you bring that up because there was also that there was a leaked phone call from the Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, I think, talking specifically to people about if we have a generational problem, we have a TikTok problem, and talking about the ways that American younger people in America are using this platform to talk about what's happening in Israel Palestine and kind of getting different perspectives on that. It's just kind of interesting when we talk about like foreign influence and adversaries and who's allowed to influence what, and we kind of look the other way or encourage it when it's certain countries, but we crack down on it when it comes to other official adversaries, you know, whoever that may be. And I think that's something to point out as well. There's you talked when you were setting this up, talking about how a lot of the proponents of this bill are saying, you know, oh, it's not a ban. Nancy Pelosi famously now the other day said it's to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner, I think is what she said. But I think in effect, from everything that I understand about this and from the comments from the CEO and what the people from ByteDance seem to be indicating is they have no intention of selling. Like this is a bill that doesn't ban TikTok, but is trying to coerce ByteDance to disinvest from the company and to sell it to, I guess, American investors or whoever. And they seem to be pretty clear that that's not something that they're considering. So it is in effect a ban of the app. And I guess so. How would that work in practice? It would be taken off the app stores, or do you know anything about like how exactly this would affect people that use the app?
So I think part of, you know, what is difficult to communicate to people, because like when you go on TikTok, whenever something like this happens, it's happened multiple times, there are people freaking out. And I understand why they're freaking out because they don't necessarily understand what's being proposed here. They just hear TikTok ban or they get that pop-up that's like, call your representatives. They're trying to ban TikTok. And they're like, we're going to lose TikTok tomorrow. And it's like, well, it wouldn't go away tomorrow. But what would happen is, assuming that this bill passes the Senate and gets signed into law by the president, then from that moment, there's 6 months that TikTok has to be divested from ByteDance and be sold to an American company. And, you know, one theory that I've seen thrown out there, which I think is it makes sense, is like that already is a really unrealistic timeline, even if TikTok wanted to sell to an American owner, which they don't. So, you know, within that 6 month time frame, not only do they have to find an American buyer or multiple buyers because it would be so expensive, there are very few entities that could actually afford it. Not only would they have to find a buyer, not only would they have to negotiate that sale, but then they would actually have to transfer all the data and get the system essentially up and running within that 6 month time frame. So it's pretty unrealistic off the bat. And assuming that they don't find a buyer in that amount of time, at the 6 month mark, they would take the app down from like Google Play and Apple's App Store. And so that in itself would not TikTok right then and there, it would still, if you had already downloaded it, it would still be on your phone. You could still access the app. But what would happen is ByteDance would no longer have the ability to update the app and like send that update to anyone's phones. So what we would likely see happen is like within, you know, a few days or weeks, all of these bugs would start popping up because every few weeks, TikTok updates the app to correct bugs and to introduce new features and to keep things working. And so eventually the app would just start to break. And that is how they would essentially like ban the app, is TikTok would just no longer function.
Yeah. And I would like to talk about how this is being framed by the people that are supporting this bill as somehow like protecting American security or protecting people's
Right.
privacy specifically. This idea of like, oh, this is being done because China and on the end, this foreign adversary country has your data. They have this kind of like spying device on your phone. But can we talk a little bit about about whether this bill actually does that? Because this is my understanding of this is that there's plenty of things the US government could do to protect people's data, not just from ByteDance and China or whoever, but the American companies as well that also harvest all our data. I mean, I think that's the thing is people that kind of live there, have this life online, understand like our data is all out there.
Yes.
This bill in particular is not really doing anything meaningfully to protect people's data. If China or whoever else wants to get your data, there are ways of doing that. Right? Like this is that's not has anything to do with about what this bill really is it?
Correct. Yeah. This bill doesn't even have anything to do with data privacy. Like, that is what is so confounding about sort of like the sales pitch for the bill is like, you actually read it, it has nothing to do with that. There's nothing in the writing about China actually being able to acquire US data, because like you said, they already do, and they do it through numerous ways. It's true that, you know, TikTok, like all apps and all social media platforms that you download and you create accounts on, they do have access to data that they store for some amount of time. That is true. But in addition to TikTok having access to that kind of data, Facebook is actually the biggest driver of leaking American data to foreign entities. So it's just really, really ridiculous. Like, yeah, TikTok could do some of the same things, but we don't even know if they have. There's no proof, there's no expose that shows that China and like the Chinese Communist Party is looking at American data specifically through TikTok. What we do know they're looking at is data that Facebook shared with them over the course of a decade until they were caught in 2019. And Facebook had all these data sharing partnerships for a whole decade with multiple Chinese companies, including firms that had been flagged by US intelligence agents as having like strong connections to the actual Chinese government. So Facebook has done this, like other American companies have done this. And then in addition to that, the data privacy situation in the US is so uniquely vulnerable and so uniquely bad at protecting people that all of our data is already on this third-party data broker network. Our data is constantly being sold to these shadowy third parties who can then sell it to whoever they want. That's already been a massive problem. And it's so bad here with our companies that it affects everyone else around the world. So, like in the EU, for example, they have much stronger
Yeah.
regulations around data and privacy and technology. But because the companies that everyone uses are American social media companies, we've endangered other countries with our terrible data practices.
Yeah, and you've seen tangible real world examples of Facebook having this like hugely detrimental effect not only in America but like around the world as well.
Exactly.
yeah, which is another interesting aspect to this. I want to ask as well, because another thing that like I was looking at some of this the conversations and debate going around about this bill. Another thing that the people that support the bill have been saying is that there's no way that it could be used to target other apps or websites. I think there's been a lot of people that are very justifiably concerned that this could be kind of like a Patriot Act type situation where they kind of
Yes.
frame it as being one thing to keep people safe and security, but all of a sudden have given themselves these incredible draconian powers to go after other apps or websites that they don't like.
Yep.
So is like I've seen people very vehemently denying that that's possible with this bill, but what is your take on that? Do you think they're lying or what?
So, I mean, the bill explicitly says, and there are a few qualifications before the president can say, like, this app, this other app or website or web platform is also a foreign adversary controlled app. So, like, there are some things written in this bill that would prevent the president from just designating any app as this foreign adversary controlled thing. So, for example, the app, in order to be considered such, has to have over a million monthly active users. There are like a couple of, little like side notes here about like it has to pass these qualifications before like the government can identify it as such. But like there are flaws with that to me. The first thing that jumped out to me about this is that regardless of how big the app's user base needs to be, this bill still would effectively like increase the power of the executive branch. And this is an issue that has repeatedly come up over the past decade in terms of the growing power of the executive branch. And so that was like the first red flag that stuck out to me. And then another thing, and this is kind of almost like counterintuitive, but there are, apps from foreign countries that are very detrimental to Americans. One thing that I look at a lot and have been looking at really recently is deepfake apps, which like if you go on the app stores, and this is like really like in the moment, like the type of thing that they're supposedly like trying to protect us against with bills like these deepfake apps, they're developed in countries all around the world. Some of them are developed in the United States, but some of them are developed in China. Some of them are developed in Russia. Like there are apps, being developed around the world that are on our app stores that have very little scrutiny and very little regulation around them. But because of that, like 1 million monthly active users number, I don't even think that the government would then have the power to do anything about those apps. So it really does, like, it's very outfitted for TikTok individually, and then it could be used for other things in the future. But regardless of what they're trying to do, it's like it's ineffective at anything other than TikTok or any other like major social media platform.
And I think, it makes me think about how, you mentioned that there's this element about what's going on right now in Israel, Palestine right now, and the fact that there's a lot of people, especially younger people, that are getting access to a different version of the narrative that gets talked about when it comes to this subject in our mainstream media. And
Yes.
people in the ADL are talking about like it's this TikTok problem, or American political leaders are talking about, oh, it's this t the issue is TikTok, it's radicalizing these young people. When really what's like their young people are being radicalized by the thing that's happening. That's just
Right.
the venue that they're learning about these kinds of things.
Yes.
And that's kind of the interesting kind of philosophical question here that I think this opens up, which is that do people have the right to consume information that falls outside of the narrative that our media decides is the acceptable version of events, whether it's about Israel, Palestine, or any other kind of foreign policy issue or whatever. Like, you don't have to agree with that
Exactly.
narrative, or you don't have to agree with that, but do people have this right to do that? And I think this is like possibly going to set a really dangerous example of the United States government stepping in and saying no, like you don't. If we feel like people too many people are getting their minds changed over this issue that we want to have kind of strict control over the messaging on, we're going to go ahead and take these big steps to ensure that people don't have access to that platform, which is like a hugely, I think, really dangerous sort of precedent, right?
It absolutely is. And that's like why the ACLU is all over this, because it clearly establishes a threat to both freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And in addition to that, it just is so nonsensical because even if you didn't have a TikTok platform, a TikTok account, even if you had no access to TikTok whatsoever and you went on other social media platforms, you would still be seeing a lot of information that counters this official narrative. X, Twitter, it's just awash with the exact same types of posts that people are seeing on TikTok. In some cases, I even think American social media companies are driving more of kind of the anti-Israel backlash than TikTok itself. I think you could make a very strong argument that it's not really a TikTok thing. It's more of like a Twitter thing, and it's more of a YouTube thing, and it's more of like a Reddit thing. But in addition to that, I just think that it is really anti-democratic, and when they are concerned about young people being anti-American and being anti-establishment and losing faith in the democratic process and losing faith in Congress and all these other things that they're concerned about, banning TikTok is only going to make that so much worse. And just
Yes.
the fact that they're talking about it is making that so much worse. If you go on TikTok and you look at how people are reacting to this, it is absolutely furthering that belief that like Congress isn't acting in our best interests, like both parties are like trying to evade real problems. Like it's already having that effect of furthering that sort of radicalization.
Yeah, and I think you look at the sort of political implications as well. Like we talked about, this is a bipartisan effort, but you also have people like Donald Trump now coming out against it, despite kind of being for it before. You have people in like the Freedom Caucus of US Congress, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, and these people, they're all coming out against it. It's not because they have these like principles about ensuring we can have access to Chinese technology or anything like that, but they recognize that it's deeply unpopular as well, and that there's going to be a constituency out there that's not going to be very happy that the United States government is doing this. And I think it's interesting to think the implications of the Biden administration overseeing this, the removal of this app, which is used by, what's like 130 million Americans or something like that. Lots of young people across the ideological spectrum, you have them kind of overseeing this like ban of this incredibly popular application. And then you have people like Donald Trump saying, like, no, I don't think we should do it. It's in a number of ways that I think Democrats and liberals should be worried about young people and their perceptions of them. That I think is a whole new kind of angle of that, where they're going to be the ones kind of left holding the bag there as they get rid of this application that is really used by so many people. It's like it's really not going to be a good look, and I feel like it's only helping the Donald Trump MAGA movement to be promoting it, you know?
If I like I that was one of the big things that stood out to me was I was like, what are the Democratic strategists thinking here? And every move that they've taken thus far to communicate what this bill is about has made it worse. It reminds me of, like across the pond, how the royal family is handling this like Kate Middleton situation.
Just
It's
throwing
like
gasoline on the fire.
absolutely, absolutely just throwing gasoline on the fire. And I think it really shows how these political and th these political establishments are really tr like having a difficult time in the modern age because their way of communicating things to the populace does not align with how social media has changed the way the populace communicates and thinks and feels. And so, like, when TikTok put up that screen for everyone in the United States that was like, call your representatives, lots of people called their representatives. Young people, like teenagers, but also elderly people, old people. There's lots of like old people on TikTok. It's
Yeah,
really
I'm one of
fun for
them.
them. There's, yeah, there's like lots of, there's the population of TikTok is actually much older than most people think it is. It's actually dominated by adults compared to kids. But so, you had tons of people across the United States calling their representatives. And instead of just saying, like, to start, we always want to hear from our constituents, instead of saying, like, this is how the democratic process works, like, we represent you, we want to hear you, we're going to listen to what you're saying, they didn't take that tack at all. They were instead like, this is so annoying. Like, this is just proof that, like, China has this direct conduit to our American people. And I'm just sitting here like the communication is just so bad. It because now, in addition, you're just making people feel like they have no way to impact the political process because the traditional way of making your voice heard is to contact your representative. And in this case, the representatives are saying like that they're sending calls to voicemail. Their voicemails are full. They don't want to talk to you. So it's like, of course it's furthering that divide. Of course it's incentivizing like this kind of radicalization yet again.
And we have to talk about the sort of element of xenophobia here too, about singling out China as kind of the foreign adversary that needs to be fought against here. Like we've talked about, the whole tech sector and the social media sector is just swimming in foreign cash, whether it's from Saudi Arabia or Israel or wherever else. Like there's no shortage of foreign capital that's funding a lot of these tech companies. And so yeah, there's this kind of it's this part of this ongoing effort, I think, by the United States government to kind of promote this sort of civilizational conflict with China, which just seems like it's going to have disastrous results. And I would say from a personal perspective too, like, you know, I use TikTok and I've never once scrolled through TikTok and seen like a Chinese official talking about like the benefits of the Belt and Road Initiative or anything like that, any kind of thing that you could classify as like a Chinese propaganda message or something like that. But what I do see though sometimes, and I think this is really cool, is like rural Chinese people just going about their lives and living their lives and enjoying their lives. And, you know, it's, I feel like that can be kind of powerful. To realize when our governments are kind of forcing these kinds of conflicts and talking about the things that divide us, you can kind of like get this little glimpse into other people's lives around the world and realize that we're all just kind of like this the same, you know, and it's, there's something nice about that. And I can't help but feel like that's something that they don't want either, right? It's not just about young people talking about Palestine or becoming anti-American, but not having access to kind of anything that messes around with that message that's being promoted, that this is a nation and a people that we're supposed to be afraid of and we're supposed to hate and fear, you know?
Yes. And I think that, like, not only young people, but particularly since all the attention is on like Gen Z and Gen Alpha and even millennials who are no longer young people whatsoever. It's like, you know,
yeah, tell me
you
about
look
it.
At these, you look at these demographics, and I think that it is very clear to me that when you have this really anti-Chinese sentiment among like political elites, as well as like the commentariat, like I've seen like really anti-Chinese sentiments espoused by like Jonathan Chait in like in New York Magazine. And I'm like, that worldview has become very antiquated and very like kind of cordoned off from the rest of American society for many reasons. One reason is that social media is global and it does give people the sense that they are part of a global community because they are. Another reason is like young people have grown up knowing that like all their, not all, but like a huge amount of clothes and products in their homes were made in China. So young people and people who have grown up in this age where there's actually a lot of what appears to be collaboration between the US and China, those young people don't have that sense of like, we have to hate China, we have to be against China, like China is our enemy. You don't see that at all. And I think the third thing that really reflects kind of like the whole crux of the issue here is that young people have grown up with no semblance of belief that they have that they have privacy, that they have digital privacy. Like young people, they grew up in the age of like WikiLeaks and like Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning and hearing that the US government is spying on them. So when they hear that the Chinese government is spying on them, that doesn't perturb them. They're like, oh, I already know that the FBI is watching me through my webcam. Like all these memes and all of this cultural understanding that we are not entitled to privacy. And that's what I think that Congress has really created for themselves, is that by not doing anything to substantially protect digital privacy over the past 2+ decades, they've now created a world where they can't foment all of this anti-China rage over an issue like data privacy. Young people already know that their data isn't private, so that's not going to make them want to take TikTok off their phone.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. Like, but what do you think from the, and you've been paying attention to this? I know there's been some people in the Senate that have raised concerns about this. We saw pretty broad bipartisan support getting this through the House. What do you think the chances are that this is going to get passed by the Senate and signed by Biden? Biden did say that he would sign it if it ends up on his desk. So what do you make of that?
I think that because it had such a bipartisan push through the House so quickly, I would not be surprised if it makes it through the House and ends up happening. I think that like a couple years ago, I would have said, like, no, I don't think that this is going to happen. But particularly in this current moment with social media, where like Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter has now shown me that kind of these big upsets in the social media space are possible. They're very possible. And I actually think that, like, you know, let's say TikTok gets purchased by an American buyer and they manage to keep the platform running. To me, that's like very possible to become like an Elon Musk 2.0 situation. Because
Yeah.
some of the people who have expressed interest in buying TikTok are like people like
Like
the
Steve
platform
Mnuchin.
Kick, Steve Mnuchin,
Yeah.
the platform Kick, the platform Rumble. Like these conservative entities have expressed a desire to buy TikTok. So they're just kind of setting us up for like X 2.0, like Elon Musk 2.0.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see. Like, I really feel like people in the United States government are underestimating the fact that people are going to lose their fucking minds if this does
Yeah.
go through. Maybe it would be actually be very kind of funny and ironic if this was the kind of straw that broke the camel's back that like led to the entire younger generation just saying like, okay, this is enough. We've had enough now.
Yeah.
We're coming for you.
And
I
I
nothing would
really
surprise
think,
me.
yeah, and I really think that that's possible because, especially like, and this isn't good. Like, it's not good that
No.
TikTok has created and engineered these features that are so compulsive, but there are a lot of people who are so hooked on TikTok that they are consuming like upwards of 12 hours of screen time a day on TikTok. That's not going to end well. If you pull that from them, that's just not going to end well. It
Yeah.
just isn't. It's not going to end well on a personal level or a community level. And much more broadly, I think that they're going to be shocked if it actually goes through.
Yeah, and like you pointed out, not only has like Meta and Facebook been behind a lot of this campaign of kind of drumming up support for people to challenge TikTok in this way, but they've also tried to kind of copy their user interface and algorithm and stuff. But I think there's this logic that people, if they lose TikTok, are just going to head on over to Reels or wherever. I don't think is really reflective of reality. It's because it's no, they haven't really been able to recreate the same sort of user experience, no matter how much they've tried. So.
Exactly. Like I've used Reels and I've looked at YouTube Shorts, and just from a very like rudimentary, like kind of examining the features, it becomes obvious so quickly that that technology is nowhere near what TikTok is. Like the editing capabilities are nowhere near TikTok's. The social features that have been built into TikTok are not replicated with like YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels. So it's not just like an alternative, it's a copycat. But it will never fulfill what TikTok has become.
Yeah. Well, really interested to see how this develops, and I'll be paying attention to your coverage of this as well. And other tech issues, Kat, thanks so much for joining the program to talk to me today. Do you just want to let everyone know where they can find your work before we sign
Yeah,
off here?
so you can find my work on NBCnews.com on my author page. I'm also still on Twitter or X, however you prefer to label it. And then
I'm going down with the ship.
I'm also on Blue Sky if anyone is super over Twitter, which I completely
Yeah. Okay, well,
understand.
Kat, I really appreciate that you came on today. Thanks a lot, and
Thanks,
I'll talk to you soon.
Rob. You too.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye-bye.